Hello, this is Terry Burdick greeting to you today from the Commercial News, the weekend edition for Saturday, November 1st and Sunday, November 2nd. We'll start on the first page as always. All of our articles on the first page today have been written by local reporter Christy Jankowski. Leading off, food concerns. Federal shutdown has families worried about SNAP benefits. The possible loss of SNAP benefits has Vermilion County families trying to find ways to make their food supply stretch. SNAP benefits were set to run out today, November 1st, but a pair of federal judges ruled against the Trump administration on Friday. As of now, when benefits will be available remains unclear, because even with federal court ruling, agencies in Illinois at this time are reviewing orders. They state in part, SNAP November benefits remain on hold by the federal government until further notice or ordered by the courts. Even if the courts order payment, it is uncertain how long it will take for SNAP payments to be made. Jasmine Gonzalez, the store manager at Heavenly Square Grocery in Danville, was preparing to be without her SNAP benefits. She said she receives about $100 a month. However, she said even that amount of help barely makes a dent. For $100, you can maybe get a gallon of milk, eggs, and a little bit of meat, she said. And with a $100 bill before, you could get a good amount of groceries. Now you can barely get 10 things with $100. Gonzalez said that while she has children, they are older and live on their own. Her worries are more for others than herself during the SNAP drought. As of right now, I mean, I think I can deal with it, she said, but it's going to be really hard with the children. Or for some people who don't have a job and there are places not hiring, what can they do to get food on the table? As of the impact, she's distraught about who it's impacting the most. It's pretty sad that it's happening right now. The majority of people in low income are going to be affected by it, Gonzalez said. While she is fine right now, it really depends on how long the stop lasts. She said if she has to, she will visit food pantries. It's rare when I go, a necessity if I do, she added. Even if I work at a grocery store, prices are still high. And she's put off paying bills just so she and her family could eat. She said about not paying bills, yes, of course, first my lights, my power, gas, and water. As far as how to handle this crisis, she said, neighbors need to help each other more. Get involved with the community. It's a small town, but everyone can help each other out. Denise McCullough is also going to feel the heat of the loss of SNAP benefits. She said she gets around $255. It's going to hurt, McCullough said. And she said people are already struggling. The pantries are really slim right now. I went the other day and got 2 bags, she said. I accepted it. I didn't complain. Something is better than nothing, she said about how she's trying to prepare. While she is concerned, she's most concerned, like Gonzalez, about the children. I'm not going to struggle, but I am going to do the best we can, she said. I'm mainly concerned about the kids, what they're going to eat and how they're going to eat it. You know, if you have kids, they have to be fed, she said. You have to think about the kids. She added that one of her favorites is just adding whatever vegetables she has on hand to a pot with water and broth. If you have it, to make a soup. See what they give you and make a meal of it. Just see what you can do, she added. Take a little $5 to pack a pack of meat to make your meal. You have to be wise about it. She also wanted to remind others that this is temporary. This is a hole that we are going through right now, but it's not going to last forever, so we need to be wise in our spending, she said. It's really going to affect the kids. It's going to affect the kids a whole lot. It's going to be rough. It's going to be hard, but you've got to make do with what you've got. Eastern Illinois Food Bank Marketing Manager Sophie Ellis said she understands the societal pressure of using a food pantry. A lot of towns we serve, everyone knows everyone, and that complicates it more. I also grew up going to food pantries, so I know how it is, she said. She wants to stress, though, that EIF is there to help out food pantries in Central and Eastern Illinois and not to be afraid to ask for help. I, of course, see it differently. Like you're going to the grocery store, there's no shame in it, she said. In staying with the theme of food insecurity, I want to go to another section of the paper this morning to share a related story. And this, too, was by Christy Jankowski, and the headline is 25% of Vermilion County children experience hunger. Sophie Ellis, the Marketing and Communications Manager of the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, or EIF, said the impact of the SNAP loss is going to hurt families and children in Vermilion County. Vermilion County is our highest county for child hunger, Ellis said. 1 in 4 children in Vermilion County are experiencing hunger. Some food pantries stated they're already seeing an increase in the number of people they are serving, and that is prior to SNAP benefits being stopped. "We've seen a steady increase in the last month or 6 weeks," said Jenna Perez, executive director of Dwelling Place and a volunteer with the St. Vincent de Paul Food Pantry. "We're open every Thursday from 10 to noon, and last Thursday we had a record of 155 families, where we were seeing maybe between 75 and 100. We were not even able to open Thursday because we had no food to give out." She said they will have plenty of food this coming week since they get a food truck on Wednesday. "We really couldn't afford to go to a grocery store and buy retail enough for another 100 or 150 people," she said, "so our only option was to close today and start again next week." Perez said the church spends around $3,000 to $5,000 a month in food for the pantry with fundraisers and donations. She said times are certainly hard. "It's definitely hitting the homeless. It's hitting people who are struggling anyway. And now you take the SNAP benefits away completely," Perez said. "There's going to be a lot of people who struggle." And many places will not know the full impact until later in the month. There are multiple food pantries and help available through Vermilion County. Here's a list of local resources. You can visit the St. James Food Pantry on their website at stjames-umc.com/foodpantry, and they conduct distributions every third Wednesday of the month. The next one is November 19th. The St. Vincent de Paul Food Pantry operates out of the Holy Family Church, located at 444 East Main Street in Danville, with distributions every Thursday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. The Dwelling Place offers a hot meal on Mondays and Fridays, a sack lunch on Tuesdays and Thursdays. The Danville Township Pantry is open 3 days a week from 1:30 to 3:30 on Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, located at 18th Southgate Drive in Tilton. The Salvation Army of Danville offers food pantry services. It says on their website to contact them for times. They can be reached at 217-442-5911. And the Eastern Illinois Food Bank has its food mobile services, which distribute food throughout Central Illinois. They will visit Vermilion County again on November 25th. To find more sites, visit EIFoodBank for Eastern Illinois, foodbank.org, and you may also be wondering how you can help. The Second Church of Christ in Danville is currently hosting its 20th annual food drive, which will end on November 2nd. We're collecting food that's going to be distributed to food pantries, food banks in Vermilion County, and a couple of locations in Indiana, said Dale Daniel, pastor at Second Church of Christ. "When we deliver the load, up the truck, because we have two big panel trucks that we fill up and take to all the different food pantries." The pastor said the drive collected 5 tons of food last year. If you're interested in donating, pick up a box at the church and fill it with the list inside. Companies are also getting in on the help as well. The Literary in Champaign has an Oh Snap menu, where those with a SNAP card can order a free meal from their menu during the week from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. The Hopscotch Bakery and Market is also getting in on the action of helping. The business posted on their social media on Thursday that they're donating 20% of their profits every Saturday in November to the Eastern Illinois Food Bank. "We're really lucky with our community. People are really coming together," Ellis said about how businesses and people are pitching in. We're trying right now to give very reassuring messaging because we're not concerned about an impact on us," she said. "The pantries are going to be strained, but all we can do is work as hard as we can for them. We also want to reassure the community that help is out there." Returning to other news on our front page, Jackson to visit Danville. Jesse Jackson Jr. will make another appearance in Vermilion County on Saturday as he holds a meet and greet at the Roselawn Center. I know that we're reading this post Saturday, but I thought you'd still be interested. Jackson, who is running as a Democrat for the 2nd Congressional District in Illinois, will be making his third appearance in Vermilion County in the past 6 months. Reverend Frank McCullough, one of the organizers of the event, said there was also free food for the family as well as fellowship. Jackson plans to share his plans for economic growth. The event was organized by McCullough, Danville Alderman Edward Butler, and Dionata Brooks. The event was scheduled to begin at 1 o'clock on Saturday at the Three Kings of Peace Mentoring Center located at 302 West Roselawn. I'm sure we'll have more information on how that meeting went later on this week. Moving on, our final front page article today, Greer promoted to executive director. The Fisher Theater announced on Friday that Ashton Greer will serve as the full-time executive director. Since May, Greer has served as the interim director. Ashton has shown extraordinary leadership, vision, and dedication to the Fisher and the Danville communities, said Rui Sandusky, board president of the Vermilion Heritage Foundation, which oversees the theater. Her ability to bring people together and implement sustainable change has set the stage, literally and figuratively, for the theater's next chapter. Recently, Greer led a press conference about the theater's growth, which is leading to renovations. Leader said she has reduced the operating budget by 30% while quadrupling the reserves. Through her leadership, a matching donation campaign was started and raised $70,000 in just a few months. Those funds are used for the restoration of the gift shops and improvements to the concession area, which will be named the Terry Lake Cafe. Greer has also changed the staffing of the theater and introduced modern systems to the theater. Since its restoration, the Fisher Theater has been a symbol of pride and possibility for Danville, said Greer. It's an honor to continue building on that legacy with our dedicated team, volunteers, and donors. None of this is possible without this incredible group of supporters. Together, we're creating a vibrant, sustainable future for this historic landmark. Greer has been with the theater since 2020. She has served as the operations director, a volunteer, a donor, a board member, and as board president. Leader said she also brings a decade of experience in multiple professional sectors like government, nonprofit, healthcare, and more. Greer is the founder of Fred and Ma LLC, which is working to bring the downtown of Danville to life through the restoration of historic areas. Greer is also involved with Clarity Design Company, serving as the fractional COO and leadership consultant. Greer also joined the Danville Planning and Zoning Commission in 2024 and was recently recognized as an emergent female leader of Illinois. We've talked about the community rallying together for food, to the issue of food insecurity. Our next headline speaks to some other pretty amazing donation spirit going on. Big Four wins paper shoe drive. This is brought to us by Chad Dare with a Dateline of Danville. For more than a decade, the Vermilion County Regional Office of Education has hosted a shoe drive. This year, Tricia Keith, the Regional Safe School Program Coordinator, added a unique contest. I'm always thinking of ways to increase our outreach for the shoe drive, Keith said, how to make more people aware and how to get more donations in. While a number of shoes get donated every year, Keith said cash donations help when they have special order requests like slip-on shoes or Velcro-style shoes and even unique sizes. We are able to share with many of our community agencies, such as The Dwelling Place, Fair Hope, Christians Ministry, Crosspoint, and Probation, Keith added. As a way to increase cash donations this year, Keith implemented a challenge between five bars in Vermilion County where patrons could buy a paper shoe for a minimum donation of a dollar, and that shoe would hang in that establishment for a month. The bar that raised the most money would not only get bragging rights, but also a trophy to display in their establishment. The first ever winner was Beth's Big Four Bar on Vermilion Street in Danville with $1,497 raised. The grand total from all five bars was $4,016. I am very thankful for the support of my friends at each one of these bars, Keith said. Thank you, Doug Ward, Hideaway Slots and More, Lori Church at the Halfway Inn, Beth Owens at Beth's Big Four, Scott DeMolino at Rosie's Tavern, and Carissa Kinney at Lori Sportsman's Inn. The generosity of my friends and all their patrons was more than I ever could have imagined. Keith noted that Justin and Sarah Mornout with Stir, along with Amy and Troy Watson with the local farmhouse, also participated in the paper shoe drive for the final 2 weeks. Fatman's Warehouse and Izzy's in Westville are joining the competition next year. The true winner from all of this are the kids, families, and our neighbors that will benefit from this generosity, said Keith, noting that shoe drive never stops. New athletic shoes and financial donations are accepted year-round. Well, congratulations on a great shoe drive. What a wonderful, wonderful community service. In more local news, Danville received state award. The City of Danville is receiving the Project of the Year Award for its Garfield Park and Aquatic Center projects. The Illinois Chapter of American Public Works selects a winner annually to honor. While some may view the Garfield Park and Aquatic Center as controversial, I believe the people of Danville deserve vibrant recreational spaces right here at home, Danville Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. said. As we tackle and complete major infrastructure projects such as the sewer system, we must also invest in the quality of life for our residents. Williams went on to add that Garfield Park is within proximity to the city's largest elementary schools. It is heavily utilized by both the Boys and Girls Club and the Seahawks, our largest youth football and cheerleading program, and will next year house the city-sponsored Bobo Smalls Youth Basketball League, he said. Needless to say, I am proud that we were able to revitalize Garfield Park and Aquatic Center. This would not have been possible without the hard work and dedication of our public work team and grant manager, Kaylee Sanchez. There will be an annual awards presentation dinner at the APWA Illinois Conference honoring the projects, which will happen at 6 p.m. on November 5th at the Peoria Civic Center. Williams and Director of Public Works and Engineering David Rue will be accepting the award. Also honored are representatives from Schomburg and Schomburg and Farnsworth Group for their contributions. Because of the award presentation, the What's Brewing with Mayor Williams event originally scheduled for November 5th at Turtle Run has been rescheduled to 5 to 6:30 p.m. on November 13th, still at the Turtle Run Golf Course and Banquet Center. Well, we've reached the midpoint of our time together today. Let's take a moment and read the death notices. So these obituaries were received by 5 p.m. on Friday. Herman Rex Cobble II, age 63, passed away on October 28th with his family by his side. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. on Monday, November 3rd at Sunset Funeral Home's Houghton Leisure Chapel in Georgetown. The service will be 10 a.m. on Tuesday, November 4th at the funeral home, and burial will be proceed at the Forest Park Cemetery. Mr. Cobble was from Olivet. In Covington, Indiana, George Vrendenberg, age 96, passed away on October 28th at Fountain Springs Assisted Living Facility. His visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern on November 3rd at Sunset Funeral Home's Covington Chapel. The service will be at 7 p.m. Eastern on November 3rd, also at the chapel. This concludes the readings of this time's death notices. While most of you will be listening to this on Monday, I hope you didn't miss the opportunity on Sunday to fall back with your clocks. But we have an article today from the Associated Press, How Americans Feel About Changing the Clocks. I thought this might be of interest. Yes, you'll get a shot of an extra hours of sleep, but even with that, it might be one of the most dreaded weekends on the American calendar, the end of daylight savings time. Only 12% of U.S. Americans favor the current system of daylight savings time, which has people in most states changing the clocks twice a year, according to a new APNORC poll, while 47% are opposed and 40% are neutral. Around the country, the clocks will go back 1 hour at 2 a.m. Sunday, respective local times, to mark the return to standard time and more daylight in the mornings. The poll from the Associated Press and ORC Center for the Public Affairs Research shows that for many Americans, it's an unwelcome change, and if forced to choose, most would prefer to keep that extra hour of daylight in the evening. Pravanta Yanti is among those who strongly opposes the switch. The 31-year-old Los Angeles resident grew up in India where the clocks don't change. When he came to the United States for graduate school, some relatives made sure he knew about it. He thought he was prepared, but when it actually happened, it took me by surprise, Yanti said, because of how quickly it got dark in the later half of the day. There have been calls for the U.S. to stop making the twice-yearly changes, including a piece of legislation that stalled after the Senate passed it in 2022. Among those urging that the county stick to one time for the entire year are the American Medical Association and American Academy of Sleep Medicine, as well as President Donald Trump, who issued a social media post about it earlier this year. Permanent daylight savings, not daylight savings, as many people say colloquially, would be unpopular with a significant chunk of people, though the poll found, particularly those who prefer mornings. Changing clocks is unpopular. The United States first started using the time shift over a century ago during World War I, then again in World War II. Congress passed a law in 1966 that allowed states to decide if they would have it or not, but required their choices to be uniform across their territories. All states except Arizona and Hawaii make the time shifts. These two states remain one standard time year-round. Time changes are also undertaken in some other parts of the world like Canada and Europe, but not in others like Asia and North America. Europe and North America change the clocks a week apart, resulting in a short period where the time difference between the regions is an hour shorter than the rest of the year. But although about half of U.S. adults are opposed to the switch, including 27 who are strongly opposed, many don't care one way or the other. That's particularly true of adults under 30, with 51% saying they neither favor nor oppose the practice. Those over 30 are more likely to oppose it, with about half saying they dislike the twice a year of switching clocks. If they had to choose one time for the country to use, more than half of adults, 56%, preferred making daylight savings time permanent, with less light in the morning and more light in the evening. About 4 in 10 prefer standard time with more light in the morning and less in the evening. Those who consider themselves night people are much more partial to permanent daylight saving time. 61% said that would be their choice. And morning people are just about evenly split, with half of them preferring permanent daylight saving time and 50% wanting permanent standard time. Vicki Robson is one of those night people. If the 74-year-old retired nurse had to pick one time to go by, it would definitely be permanent daylight saving. "I don't get up early in the morning, so I don't need the light in the morning," said Robson of Albert Lea, Minnesota. "I need it more in the late afternoon, early evening. I like when it's later, because that's when I do things. I've always worked the evening shift, and now that I'm retired, I would go out and take a walk after supper if it was light." How do you feel about saving time and switching clocks? I'm sure we're going to talk about it again. Turning to news from the state capitol, lawmakers okay sweeping energy reform package, and this came to us from Andrew Adams at the Capitol News, Illinois. A closely watched and long-debated piece of energy legislation is set to become law after passing through both legislative chambers with the governor's endorsement. The bill that cleared the General Assembly Thursday funds energy storage systems through a new charge to Illinois electric consumers that will take place in 2030. The bill also lifts a longtime ban on new nuclear power developments and gives new authority to state utility regulators. Proponents say the bill will lower costs for utility customers, but critics worry that a lack of cost control measures will increase electricity prices for Illinois residents. Here's the bottom line in my view. This package is about making energy more affordable for ratepayers in years ahead. We're getting more energy on the grid, bill sponsors Senator Steve Stottleman, a Democrat from Rockford, said Thursday. If we do nothing, the rates are going to continue to go up. The Illinois Senate approved Senate Bill 25, also known as the Clean and Reliable Grid Affordability Act, or CRGA, on Thursday evening, 37-22. That follows the House of Representatives approving it Wednesday night, 70-37. It next heads to Governor J.B. Pritzker, who pledged to sign the bill Thursday, noting that what we're trying to do is lower electricity costs. Pritzker's office was heavily involved in negotiations around the bill throughout its tumultuous legislative history. Versions of the bill state back to negotiations in 2024, with initial talks of an energy package cropping up in the weeks ahead of a January 2025 lame duck session. Drafts of the bill circulated throughout the spring legislative session before ultimately being abandoned. We're having a change in one of our editorial writers. For those of you that have enjoyed Don Richter's Days Gone By column for a number of years, he has today's is especially poignant. It's titled Penning My Final Article. More than 30 years ago, the Commercial News invited me to write a biweekly guest column titled Days Gone By. I told the editor I might have enough information for a year or two. After more than 750 columns, it's time to end Days Gone By before I begin repeating columns. I appreciate all the people who have given me information and leads on stories through the years. I'm also grateful for all the cards, letters, and digital messages I've received from readers. History and people have always been interesting to me. As a hobby, I interviewed my first person when I was in my teens as a school project. It became a hobby, and I continue those interviews for more than 60 years. I learned long ago, everyone has a story to tell, and everyone is part of history. Each person is special. Some may be more prominent than others, but there are no ordinary or common people. Every individual is unique in their own way. Writing this column has been a joy throughout the years. The CN allowed me to select the content, and it gave me the opportunity to share history and a few of my personal stories with readers throughout the years. I certainly appreciated the opportunity. My first contact with the Commercial News was with the late Robert Bob Wright in the 1960s. We became friends and worked together on a number of Vermilion County Museum projects. He was one of the founders of the organization. Bob had a career at the CN lasting nearly a half a century. He was a reporter, beloved columnist, and editor during those years. He encouraged me to share the information I had been gathering with others. I began doing so in the museum publication Heritage more than 40 years ago. Bob often talked about the importance of a newspaper to a community. He believed a paper gave it ears, eyes, and a voice. These are challenging times for newspapers, but the Commercial News continues to be a voice for the people under the guidance of editor Chad Dare. It has been doing that for more than 150 years. Without the CN and its readers, there would have been no days gone by. Thanks again to all who have assisted with information and those who have read my column. I've always heard the Illinois Prairie singing, and it's been a pleasure to share the voices of its people with you. Editor's note: the Commercial News thanks Don and Sue Richter for their dedication to Vermilion County history and their contributions to our publication. Bob continues as a member of the Vermilion County Museum Board. Thanks, Don. You've done a great job all these years. In the last few minutes we have together, let's turn our attention to local sports. In the local roundup, DAC women's basketball loses opener by Marvin Holman. The Danville Area Community College women's basketball team fell 83-68 to Moraine Valley Community College in Friday's season opener at Mary Miller Gym. Salt Fork graduate Alexa Jamison led the Lady Jaguars with 13 points, with Michaela Drake had 12, Aaliyah Emerus had 11, and Madison Job added 9 points. DAC will try to even its record when it hosts next Clark State College. In college volleyball, DAC 3, Prairie State 0. Let's see what else is going on. Hungry for a victory, Westville senior class looks for a playoff win. The Westville football team has improved every week of the season, but with the postseason, improvement also brings a chance for the senior players to do something they have not done in their careers, win a playoff game. Our freshman year we lost, we played a good Rock Ridge team in sophomore year, and it didn't work out last year, Westville senior Easton Barney said. This year we have a good seed, we like our matchup, and we're ready to go. Our goal was to get better every week. It was to show improvement every day, and I feel we've done that, Westville head coach Guy Goodlove said. I wouldn't expect anything less from them. The game last year at Chester left a bad taste in our mouth, and we should have won. These kids have stepped up and delivered, and they've done everything we've asked of them in the field and in school. Last year's team went 6-4 and had to go on the road, but with a 9-0 record, the Tigers are hosting 5-4 Shelbyville today at 2 p.m. And this was on Saturday. Going 9-0 is important for us. We wanted our first game to be at home, and here we are, Goodlove said. I think we have a great environment here. We have great support from our community, and they support us really well. It'll be exciting to have this game at home with the crowd support. The town should be fired up, and we are looking forward to it. Well, I don't know the outcome. Maybe some of you did, but we'll have to wait until tomorrow to find out. Other local teams continuing into the postseason, Oakwood continues to hit new levels. Last year, the Oakwood football team saw themselves in the playoffs for the first time under head coach Cameron Lee. For this season, the Comets, 7-2, have worked even harder, and with 4 straight wins to end the regular season, sees them hosting an IHSA Class 1A playoff game against Carrollton on Saturday. This is the kind of thing, beyond just the football game, it's really good for the community and really good for the future of the program, Lee said. It's something people get excited about. You get to play an extra game and build excitement, and you get a chance to elevate the program moving forward. The last month of the season showed how improved the Comets have become, with wins against Salt Fork, Bismarck, Henning, Rossville, Alvin included in the win streak. We have a very good group of athletes who have bought in since the beginning, and they could handle anything we threw at them, Lee said. They continue to learn and listen and grow as players. We could add a wrinkle here and add that next version of a play and a counter to everything. It keeps the game fun, keeps our kids on our toes, and adds the mental competency and layers that it makes it hard for our opponents. Well, we wish Oakwood as well, and we'll see again as we learn more about the sports outcomes this week. Well, as we wrap up our time together, let's take a peek at what's going on with our weather this week. Looks like we're going to have a lot of low 60s, and that suspiciously feels like a great fall, right? And some sun. So Monday, we've got breezy in the morning, but sunny and 61, low of 32. Some increasing cloudiness on Tuesday, but it doesn't look like a great rain chance, so high is 60, 45 for our low. Wednesday continues sunny, breezy, and pleasant at 64. Plenty of sunshine on Thursday at 55. And there's that rain coming to us on Friday, cloudy with a few showers, high of 63 and a low of 47. Looks like we've got a little bit of precipitation to still make up to get back to average in that part of the world, but it does look like it's going to be a very lovely week. This has been Terry Burdick reading to you from the Commercial News. I look forward to reading again with you soon. Have a great week.